Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, this is Sam Matterface with the Game Day Premier League preview pod. The new year starts with 10 more Premier League belters, and TalkSport is bringing them all to UK radio with our 10 games of new year. Every game, every goal, every moment to savour will be on TalkSport, TalkSport 2, or the TalkSport app. The pick of the bunch will be at the Emirates Stadium, where Manchester United, on the back of their first clean sheet in 14 Premier League games, look to become the eighth team in a row to avoid defeat at Arsenal. Welcome back, Mikel. The race for second place hots up as Leicester take on the Toon, and Pep hopes to avoid getting stuck by the Toffees. West Ham have Moyes back in the dugout. Are the fans really going to hammer the board as they take on Bournemouth? Plus, the relegation picture becomes clearer. Liverpool against Sheffield United on Thursday, and VAR hysteria. This is the Game Day Preview Pod from TalkSport.
This is Game Day, Premier League Preview Show.
And fresh from a bruising encounter with Jamie O'Hara on the Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast, Nicole Holliday is here. It's so nice to see you. How are you?
Oh, it's lovely to see you. Do you know what? That Jamie O'Hara drives me mad. He always, he tries to fish for something. Yeah, he knows how to bait me, how to wind me up.
Didn't have to look too hard, did he?
No,
really?
Do
Let's
you know
be honest
what?
About it.
Usually I think it doesn't work because Arsenal have been in such poor form that I kind of sit there and I'm like, come at me, Jamie, because I agree with everything you're saying. Whereas I think today he knew how to get me because I was quite happy, actually, with the Arsenal performance.
Well, they are on the verge of something special.
Ah, yes, there he is, our version of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, tracking back to help us all out, but then frightened off by a young whippersnapper. David Connolly is there. Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm just on the verge of something special myself.
Happy New Year. David said probably about the third or fourth pod into the new season that he thought Arsenal were on the verge of something special. What I don't think he meant was they were on the verge of their lowest Christmas finish since 1983 and starting the new year in 12th position.
Yay!
We'll get on to Arsenal in just a second because, of course, a lot of attention has been given to them and they've got the huge match against Manchester United to look forward to. Let's start with VAR, though, if you don't mind. Because that has been the topic of conversation over the last couple of days. Now, I scribed a tweet, which is in a thread on my Twitter page, at Sam Matterface, trying to give sort of like a balanced diagnosis as to what has happened with VAR, which in summary is, I don't get the offside discussions that include things like, oh, daylight, and there needs to be clear and obvious, oh, advantage needs to go to the attacker, it's only tiny or it's marginal, so therefore it's out of order. Under the current offside law, you have to have a demarcation point. The problem with VAR is actually that the technology has been proven to be imperfect, and as a result, we've sort of lost faith in it. The PGMOL could have mitigated this by being a bit more upfront about the margin for error and explaining, if they believe it to be the case, that it was still more accurate than the linesman eye, but they didn't do that. So what do you think should happen, bearing in mind the laws of the game going forward?
I mean, this weekend was a bit of a joke, really, in regards to VAR. And Sam, I get what you're saying in the sense of people saying, oh, it's such a small margin. But, I mean, Pukki's goal, for instance, or not a goal in the end, That was ridiculous. Well, I mean, when it's like an armpit or something. Do you know what? When I'm sitting there and I'm seeing loads of different images and then screenshots on social media as well with lines drawn from an armpit, and I still don't actually really understand. When it's like that, it comes to a point where it's a bit ridiculous. When it's taking them 3 minutes...
Why is it ridiculous?
Because...
Why is it ridiculous?
Okay.
That is the law of the game.
Right,
the law
surely
of the game is that you have to be able to... The mark of which you are offside is a point of your body in which you can score a goal from. Then you have to...
Right, so from an armpit?
You have to measure from that point, don't you?
So can you score from an armpit?
That's the law.
Has anyone scored from an armpit before? Because that's quite magical if they have.
Doesn't matter, does it? You can...
No, but this is what I mean. Shouldn't it be... OK, should we not then change it, perhaps, for it to be if the foot is offside?
We don't have the ability to do that.
Well, I want the ability.
This is the problem that I've got. We don't have the ability to do that. We can't. But, David, you know, you've played the game. The rules are set by someone who is a greater power than us, the PGMLO, the Premier League, the FA. It's by the International Football Association Board, of which we have some influence, but not a hell of a lot. And ultimately, these games govern everybody from Sunday League football in Singapore to Salt Lake City, from Eindhoven to Edinburgh, and all the way to the Premier League from Sunday League football on Hackney Marshes. And the laws have to be the same for everyone. So we don't get to choose, because VAR isn't particularly popular in this country, to change the laws of the game, do we?
No, but obviously in Hackney Marshes, they're not using VAR. That's the problem, right? I mean, it's not one for all. This is just for the elite level.
It's not the problem, level.
Is it? It's just the elite level.
That's the reason for the law. Because you have to have a demarcation point so that a linesman on any given Sunday down on Hackney Marshes can make a decision.
Yes, you do. I guess it's what you're saying is there's obviously clear distinction, black and white. It doesn't matter how thin that line is. There is black and white. There's
Correct.
No grey. Yeah. And I do believe that it's magnified, isn't it, on TV to about one pixel, just to maybe make it a little bit clearer for us watching at home. But in fact, it's not very clear.
Yeah.
And I don't think that putting that in the stadium is going to help whatsoever. I think it will add to the conjecture, and I think it will cause a lot of discontent in stadiums if suddenly they saw those lines on the monitor. I don't think on the big screen that will help.
Is the problem that actually people who wanted VAR to come in, and the general consensus was, especially before it was introduced, that it was going to stop the ridiculous situation where, you know, a manager comes out after the game and says, decisions like that cost me my job, or, you know, the old Neil Warnock, we've been relegated because of a bad offside decision or whatever. But actually, when it gets down to it, people don't like absolutes. They don't like it was by a toenail. They don't like it was by a hair's breadth, because as far as they're concerned, the punter, and I totally get this, that is not in the spirit of the game. That's not the reason offside was brought in the first place. But if you are going to have an offside law and you are going to use VAR, this was inevitable.
It was. What I would say, adding to this quickly, is if you look at some other sports, right, field hockey, for example, they've done away with offside to make the game more interesting. And it didn't mean suddenly the game was completely changed or whatever. They adapted, and hockey's a really good game. You've got to remember, football's a low-scoring game. Now, that doesn't mean we need entertainment at the expense of everything. That means, you know, tactically holding the line, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we have to be really careful, because it's not basketball. You know, you don't score 70, 80 points. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not rugby. It's a low-scoring game, so you want to keep goals in it. However, there has to be that balance between, obviously, what is onside, what is offside. And I guess if you look back in November, I think Neil Swarbrick was speaking on a conference with the Premier League, and he said their percentage of decision making with VAR had gone up from something like 82 to 91. So ultimately, you want it to do its job. So it is getting the decisions right. I guess the problem is, you know, the offside, I think, is the key one. I think offside is the key one that they need to iron out.
Aren't there ways, surely, that we can make it a bit better? So, for instance, the amount of time that it's taking.
Possibly.
Can't we say, you know, if they're checking VAR and within, I don't know, 30 seconds, they can't seem to find a clear and obvious error or whatever it is, then they allow the goal. At what point, it becomes a bit silly. If they're having to look at however many different angles over the course of minutes, they're clearly unsure too. So then shouldn't they give the benefit of the doubt?
Well, I agree with you. In principle, that would be a good thing. And I think that's probably sensible advice. However, having read, as I did last night, like a saddo, the IFAB protocol on VAR, matters of geography, there, yeah, I know. God, my missus is lucky, isn't she? Hey? Matters of geography are deemed as matters of fact, and therefore the phrase clear and obvious should not be applied to them. So, again, it's not in the preserve of the Premier League to do that.
OK, what about pitch side monitors? So why aren't they being used?
Now that is the preserve of the Premier League, and a lot of UEFA officials are taking the mickey out of the way we run our game here, and I think that has a long-term effects on the way that we're perceived going forward, because we use a different racism protocol than FIFA, which I don't understand, as we did the other week during the Tottenham-Chelsea match. Why do we have to do it differently? We do VAR differently. Again, we have sort of taken the IFAB protocol and stretched it to its limits and decided that we are not going to use pitch side monitors because we think that it would slow down the game. And then if you watch a Champions League game, actually it seems to speed the whole thing up. I don't understand why Mike Riley and his cohorts have decided to do that.
Well, we saw in the Club World Cup, didn't we, with Mane, with the decision that the referee overturned, went to the monitor, realised it was outside and overturned his decision. So I think that's certainly something we need to do.
OK, well, we can't solve it here because ultimately I don't think the Premier League can solve it either. But I think if I was Richard Masters and I was newly the chief executive of the Premier League, I would be organising a very big end of season debrief, not involving just the clubs, not involving just the PGMOL, but season ticket holders, people who pay to go and watch the game, who I'm sure are absolutely furious about their experience being altered. And broadcasters and journalists and lots of people from outside the game to see how to crisis manage this situation. Talking of crisis management, Mikel Arteta is hoping to avoid a fifth straight home defeat for Arsenal.
Taylor on the far side, caught by Daniel James, and James goes early to Martial, and surely this is 1-0. It is 1-0 to Manchester United. Anthony Martial with the goal. Pressing work from Daniel James pays off. Taylor was caught, really smart ball in, and Anthony Martial one-on-one with the goalkeeper. The Manchester United number 9 says thank you very much.
Ozil with a left-footed ball into the penalty area. Chambers with a non-across goal, and Aubameyang gives Arsenal the lead. The perfect start in Mikel Arteta's first home game in charge. And as so often, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is the goal hero for Arsenal.
Yes, it's an 8 o'clock kickoff on New Year's Day. Now, there were definite signs of improvement for Arsenal. The shape was much better at times. They were closer together. How do you ensure that they get some home points on the board, David?
I think this is going to be a really tough game. If you look at United, they've had a great festive period. Not only have they been at home again, Boxing Day, but then they only had to travel to Burnley. So what a festive period they've had, and their fans. Finally, they're obviously going away from home against an Arsenal team that, yes, they were improved. I thought David Luiz did well, and I thought the players had a real willingness to work. You know, you saw that of Aubameyang chasing back, putting loads of effort and endeavouring. But they're going to find this very, very difficult because United players look full of confidence, absolutely bursting with it. This will be a very, very tough game. Certainly, I think the likes of Toyero Guendouzi are going to be really important sitting in front of the back four. But, you know, you've seen for Arsenal, they just don't have the pace, I don't feel, to cope with, you know, players that United possess. And we've seen them at their best. They're absolutely frightening going forward.
Yep, and they did that against Manchester City and were particularly impressive. Nicole, what's the Arsenal fan base view on Arteta? Because from the outside looking in, there were a lot of naysayers when Arteta was appointed. What was the reaction straight after the game? You were there.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I was one of those naysayers a little bit, really, because, you know, I kind of said, what experience does he have aside from working under Pep Guardiola? But actually, considering obviously it was a loss and it was very frustrating, generally on social media, everyone had a lot of positives to say. And so did I, really, because, look, the result itself, quite hard to take. But there were a lot of really great things, actually, that I saw from this Arsenal side and myself, as well as loads of other Arsenal fans. And I think everyone's feeling quite positive. I mean, Aubameyang, like David just said, looked so good. He was tracking back. Ozil as well. You know, sometimes Ozil can be accused of just kind of hanging around a little bit, being a bit lazy. And actually, he was getting back. I think defensively, we have been shocking. And look, obviously, it wasn't great towards the end of the second half because we conceded the two goals. But defensively, we were better than we had been as well, apart from Leno's error. I think there's a lot of positives to take. I think we look like we're up for a fight. And I think as a fan, you are just happy to see, regardless of the result, when your team has put in that effort and really grafted, then I think you can be quite happy with that.
Well, what I would say is, one, I think the fans have got to be really sort of wholly invested in him. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got to give him some support. You know, I know Ancelotti's gone into Everton and arguably Arsenal could have had him, but those fans have really bought into what he's been doing. So they need to buy into that. What I would say, at 1-0, they were cruising. Could they have scored a second one really to put the game to bed? Mm. I think the injury to Chambers had an impact.
Yeah, massive.
I thought Mustafi then just sat off a little bit too much at times. Thought Leno for the goal. Why was he coming
Jorginho
to punch it?
Had an impact coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, Leno, you mentioned Leno. Why does he go and punch the ball? He's just got to claim that and take that cleanly. You know, if you think about how many times you've seen goalkeepers come and clean and take that and just relieve the pressure. Why he came with a punch, and I just don't get it. So there are a lot of things to correct.
Where is he going?
I don't know.
I know. But you know what? With that, I'm actually, Sam, I'm really shocked at that stat against Leno, because I would have said that well, in the sense of, I think he's saved Arsenal a lot this season. I actually do think he's been very good for Arsenal. And it's one of those where, look, he'll be beating himself up about that, won't he? And as fans, it's frustrating to see something like that happen. But, you know, it is an error and it will happen. No player's going to be perfect. They're all going to make mistakes. Clearly, he's made quite a lot. But I don't know. I think they're... Do you know what you say about Mustafi? And I agree. But considering how much hate he gets, and to be honest, how poor he can be, I actually think when he first came on, he did quite well, which I think you don't often say for Mustafi.
I think the most concerning thing for me was the fact, and Manchester United will have looked at this, is that they defended really well, actually, in their game on Saturday night against Burnley, which is pretty impressive. They were good on Boxing Day. But they look at Arsenal, who had 17 shots and scored once against Bournemouth, had two shots on target in the entire game against Chelsea, and none after the 13th minute of the game on Sunday. Not one shot on target after 13 minutes of the game on Sunday against Chelsea. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, yes, he tracked back and he worked really hard. Well done to him for his £300,000 a week. But he also ended up in Tarek Lamptey's pocket after they brought on the teenager for his Premier League debut. And
he
that would be a major, major concern.
Well, I guess if you're, look, when you're picking through the bones of this, you'd say that Frank Lampard, I know he's tinkered with his formation. It has worked well at times, as we've seen with his three, and then he's changed it to a back four. You know, did Mikel Arteta affect his team in the same manner? But he obviously hasn't been in the hot seat long enough, I don't think, to work out exactly maybe what he needs to
Fair enough.
At times. But what he'll have to do against United, and I agree, I mean, you know, everyone was praising Victor Lindelof after his performance against Burnley. But if you go back even further, against Man City, I thought he was the outstanding defender in a brilliant defensive performance.
Yeah.
And look, they traditionally struggled against those this season in the sort of bottom half, but they've got 6 points out of six over Christmas. They'll be going here in really good confidence. They've got bags of pace to burn. So they're going to cause Arsenal an awful lot of problems.
Yeah, I agree with that. Martial played well in that game, which is a few and far between, but he's always good on the counter-attack when linking up with James and Rashford. That game is live on TalkSport, 8 o'clock on New Year's Day and around the world on Premier League Live. On to West Ham against Bournemouth, and Manuel has left 40 Towers. David Moyes should never have been dispensed with, should he, in the first place? This is a case of an ownership group getting a little bit blinded by reputation. I mean, why on earth did they get rid of Stuart Pearce and David Moyes in the first place and replace him with a guy who was obviously past his best?
It's all a bit weird, isn't it? And I mean, Moyes was there for 6 months the first time round, and he did a decent job, but you know, obviously they didn't trust in him enough to then give him the full-time job in the end, and they gave it to Pellegrini. And then, you know, it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? I know that West Ham fans aren't exactly thrilled with this appointment, and you kind of can't blame them, because what does it say about your club when they're bringing in someone who they clearly just didn't think was good enough at the start? What I found weird as well is that he said that he's excited to be back home. What?
It's interesting that you say you understand why they the fans aren't happy with the appointment. And I was reading some fans on Twitter last night, and they were trying to organise some sort of protest during the game against Bournemouth. I don't know whether that's a sensible thing to do, really, particularly. And David, let me ask you this question. Is it a backward appointment, or is it actually an ownership group saying, look, we made a mistake. We were doing okay under David Moyes. We probably should have given him a better opportunity to go on and flourish at the London Stadium. We didn't do that, and now we're making up for our error. And actually, they're being a bit adult about it and saying, do you know what? Let's go back to where we came from and start again.
Yeah, I mean, look, they don't know. Let's be honest, they don't know. I'm sure they would have liked Moyes probably just to the end of the season, but I think Moyes has negotiated a bit of a longer deal. If you look back when he took over, they conceded an awful lot of goals. 3 against Newcastle, 4 against Swansea, 3 against Brighton, 4 against Liverpool, 3 against Burnley. I mean, you know, now they're struggling. They're struggling for goals themselves, keeping the ball out of the net. And they've gone back to someone who I think has really struggled to do that in the first place. So they've got, look, he has got it all to do, because I was at the London Stadium. I covered the game for TalkSport against Leicester, against, I wouldn't say a reserve Leicester side, but this was a Leicester side that had been patched up, put out on the pitch. No doubt these players knew that they were playing, I think, you know, a good few days beforehand, maybe even booked in sort of a week beforehand. But they performed like they were their first choice 11. I mean, they were absolutely seamless. They gelled so well. And you're looking at West Ham and you think, I know he made changes too, but some of those players, I've got to be honest, they shouldn't really be on that pitch. Carlos Sanchez was woeful. The tracking back for Damari Gray's goal just epitomised everything wrong with West Ham. He took Allaire off, put Antonio on. The crowd went bananas because they wanted 4-4-2 like they did against Southampton. They got a victory. All over the park, they were just second best. No fight. There was nothing, no will to win, no energy. The desire was lacking. So I think David Moyes, firstly, he's got to get that on the pitch. He's got to get Mark Noble on the pitch. Why he can leave his general, his midfield general, on the bench in a must-win game, I don't get it. Because if anyone, when you're the manager, you want someone out there who's going to, you know, be given the instructions. You want someone, a replica of you, out there fighting and scrapping for every ball. And we just didn't see enough of that. So West Ham are in a really tough position at the minute. They really are. And if Moyes is the right man, I hope so. But I think he's got a massive job.
It's all well and good fans moaning about the appointment of a manager or a new head coach at their club. But, you know, there have been so many managerial sackings this season that, you know, you kind of have to look at options as well, realistic options for your club and who would come.
And Eddie Howe, who is going to be in the opposition dugout at the weekend, has been touted for so many different jobs since he became the Bournemouth coach, but yet no one seems to want to take him. Do clubs, as well as outside influences, just believe that Eddie is happy with his lot down in Bournemouth and he's not going to move?
Well, the thing is, do we know? We don't really know if conversations have happened, and maybe Eddie himself has been the one to say, maybe that's a bit naive of me, but, you know, maybe he said, look, especially right now, it's not a good time at Bournemouth. And I think where he's been there for so long and done a brilliant job, I don't think that he would necessarily want to leave when it's in this state either.
Well, I just think that he's on a really, really good contract. He's very well paid. I think that he's got a secure role
that runs out in the summer.
It does run out in the summer. But I think that with the injuries that they've got, they're mounting as well. I think Jack Stacey did his hamstring. King did his hamstring too. Look, this is a game, again, which we felt for West Ham, like Leicester, with all those changes, this is a winnable game for them. And certainly at home, they've got to start picking up points. I mean, their form at home has been absolutely dreadful.
Yeah,
defeat
really
after defeat. Those West Ham fans, say what you want, you know, you've got to have a lot of sympathy for them, because they turn up in their droves and often they've seen something it's not really good enough that's served up, and especially over Christmas. So fingers crossed, some cheer in the new year.
Okay, I'm furiously texting Piercy and saying, don't go, don't leave me, stay with me, don't go back there.
I heard he can't wait to go.
I want you more than they do. Yeah, probably. Norwich scored twice on Saturday, still didn't win. They probably won't score twice against Palace.
Crystal Palace manager Roy Hodgson labelled his side's 2019 as wondrous. Despite having one of the thinnest squads in the Premier League, the Eagles escaped relegation with ease last season, and the fact Palace are closer to the top four than the bottom three is a glowing endorsement of the veteran former England coach, who has certainly rebuilt his reputation at Selhurst Park. In Jordan Ayew, the South Londoners have a player who can legitimately claim to be one of the best pound-for-pound signings in the division. After all, his five goals this season have furnished Palace with 9 points. Not bad for £2.5 million. Norwich put on a brave display at home to Tottenham at the weekend, but should really have punished the visitors for an error-strewn performance by taking the win. The Canaries are 6 points adrift of safety, and with January funds limited, it would take a miracle for Daniel Farke's men to survive. But in Emi Buendia, they do have a player second only to Kevin De Bruyne for chances created this season.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
The relentless machine keeps rolling on. Liverpool against Sheffield United is a Thursday night game. I think it's Thursday, although I'm losing track of my days rapidly at this time of the year. Are they going to nick Arsenal's invincible tag, Nicole? I mean, just to make it an even worse year for you.
No. Oh, I don't know, Sam. I mean, they may well, but... Oh, that'd be devastating, wouldn't it? Do you know what, though? Because I was actually speaking to my mum about this the other night, and she's terrified that that's going to happen. And I said to her, and I know this might sound a bit weird, but as a Liverpool side goes, if they do it, I don't entirely hate this side. Like, they are a likeable side. Jurgen Klopp is very likeable. I'm just trying to make this better for myself, aren't I? But do you know what I mean? Out of every team that it could be... As a squad, as Klopp's there,
Nicole,
they're likeable.
I feel like I'm a bit of a
they've got some handsome players. Oh, he's sweet. He's cute.
No, yeah. But I just
feel like I feel like we're trying to sort of talk you down off a ledge here.
I mean,
there's a real issue that Arsenal fans are going to have to deal with. Not only going to have the
awful.
Worst possible season in history, they're going to lose their Invincibles tag as well. Look, I mean, this is because they're so good now, David. Right? There's a real swagger about this team.
Yeah.
The risk is that it's done with so much time to go that there is enough time to have a Devon Lock, Annie Power type fall.
That won't happen, will it?
And allow someone to take over. I don't think it will happen.
No.
But I mean, the only danger I can think of is that there's too much time to go between now and the end of the season, and they've got this huge, massive lead in the back.
Well, look, we were at the King Power, weren't we? And we were down in the tunnel after, and those players had a steely determination. I tried to get something out of, you know, Jordan Henderson in terms of, well, what a result, and that's you done now. And he was like, nope. Just towed the same line as Jurgen Klopp. We're just thinking of next game, next game, next game, next game. That is it. And you got to remember, the Champions League win, they only lost one game last season, right? So it wasn't the defeats, it was the draws that killed, and they've turned them into wins. The Champions League win, obviously the Club World Cup, they've come back absolutely brimming.
Yeah.
They were brimming with confidence. And, you know, even Brendan Rodgers said after, forget the technical and the tactical. Physically, they are massive. They're hard to compete with.
Yeah.
They're so quick. They're so strong. And, you know, they've got all that sort of armoury. And you think, where's a weak link in the, you know, where's the chink in her armour. It's very hard to pick one out. However, Sheffield United gave him a really good game in the first one. It took a terrible error from Henderson, the howler, and Chrissy Wilder called him out. So you think that, you know, they've got that little bit of determination. They, you know, they'll probably make it difficult, break them down, etc., sit deep and all the rest of it, but also break forward. And you know, you never know. But look, they're going to have to perform to their absolute maximum, which is so hard to do against Liverpool.
I was at the game at Bramall Lane earlier in the season. I spoke to Chris Wilder afterwards. Dean Henderson is the kind of character, though, I think would be determined to go out and atone for that error. He's got a big personality. And if he puts in a man of the match display at Anfield, when you look back at the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers, there's every opportunity. And there are results over the course of the campaign when you look back and you think, well, they just about got over the line against Aston Villa. They just about got over the line against Leicester in the home game, thanks to a VAR decision. They just about avoided dropping points against Wolves because of very tight offside call in that game. I wouldn't be surprised if Sheffield United, with Chris Wilder in charge, just because of the way that the year and the season has gone so far, that if they are the ones that are the first ones to take points off of Liverpool since the 30th of January last year at Anfield, when Leicester managed to get a draw there.
Well, what I would say is, if they did, right, I don't think that would faze Liverpool whatsoever, because they don't have the arrogance. They don't have the arrogance to think that they are so good not to be beaten. Mm-hmm. They've got a real determination. And I think if they win this Premier League, they have to be considered one of the greatest Liverpool sides. They have to be.
Well, Pep says it's over, but can Carlo make it three in a row?
Releasing Raheem Sterling round the back of Dendonka. Sterling for 2-0!
Wow.
Oh, he's lobbed the goalkeeper, Raheem Sterling, for his second goal of the night.
De Bruyne picks up the ball, feeding forward to Aguero inside the box, and he's found the net, Sergio Aguero!
And then towards Calvert-Lewin again. Zuma's crossed this time, clearance this time, it's gone up.
Calvert-Lewin has converted! Hesitant defending by Chelsea, Kurt Zouma allowed the ball to drop from his initial header, and Calvert-Lewin reacted quickest of everyone, and after getting an early goal in the first half, Everton have done it again in the second half. Richarlison got the first, Calvert-Lewin's got the second.
Carlo Ancelotti has got a new good luck charm in Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but they didn't have it all their own way against Newcastle United. City didn't have it all their own way against Sheffield United either, did they? I thought at times, David, Manchester City were quite sloppy on Sunday.
Yeah, they were. I think they are feeling the effects of the sort of Christmas programme. They had a very, very tough game against Wolves, which I think we all expected, to be honest. They have struggled against them previously. They then struggled to recover, then it looks like against Sheffield. He seemed to drop Otamendi, put Garcia back in. But look, they got the job done. However, they're playing at Everton's side, who are just in such great form. I mean, it's brilliant to see Calvert-Lewin now. Mm. You know, again, another player full of confidence. And when I look back on Ancelotti, I know we spoke about him before, but they call him the Diva Whisperer at Real Madrid because he could handle big name players, because he was a big name player, right? And you know, he's got now Moise Keane, you know, up top a little. I know he hasn't maybe got the goal maybe that he'd like, but certainly he's got him performing well. He's managed to put attack minded players in the team without losing any balance at the back. He's dropped Sigurdsson a little bit deeper and they haven't looked any weaker. I don't know, he's had such a good impact, and you think, you know, it's really pleasing because he's one of those managers, I think he's a players manager who'll want to keep things nice, light, bright, who'll talk to them, who'll treat them like men, and who'll hope to get a performance in return. But not only that, they've showed a real tactical maturity. We spoke about him and the Christmas tree formation, didn't we? You know, he brought that in, and I don't know, I think he's more than just, you know, the titles and great players. Hopefully he'll be able to start something special there.
I like to think I'm Talk Sports Diva Whisperer, having to try and eke the best out of Colin Moore, Joey Barton, Stuart Pearce, David Connolly, Nicole Holliday. You mentioned Dominic Calvert-Lewin. 5 goals in his past 6 games since Silva was sacked. 3 under Ancelotti already. 8 Premier League goals this season. I've always thought he was a bit underestimated. Does he do too much work outside the box?
I think he's great. I think he's got a lot of potential as well. And he's strong. He looks very confident at the moment. But he's still a work in progress. I mean, Ancelotti came out and said that he thinks he's going to become one of the best strikers in Europe, which I think that's a bit of, I don't know, a bit of a big shout, no?
Well, this is a kid who's at youth level is a World Cup winner with England, isn't it? Mm. I mean, this is a guy who's been a big part of the pathway program in the England setup. I've always thought he's excellent in the air. Whenever he's come on for Everton, even in previous seasons, I thought he's been. I think he should have been given a better run in the team actually under previous managers.
But
if you can fill him with confidence and get the best out of him and stop him from doing a lot more work outside the air and sticking to in that inside that 18-yard box, then I think you could definitely get something out of him.
Well, you saw their tactic against Newcastle. Basically, they just peppered the box. Every opportunity, that ball was coming in, and Calvert-Lewin, he's big, he's strong, he's powerful. You know, I saw him score. So good in the air. I saw him score at the Amex with his left foot. He can score right foot. He can get across people. He's on the run. But I would say this. I think Big Dunk set up Carlo Ancelotti really, really well. You've got to remember those points he got over Christmas, 5 points from against Chelsea, Man U and Arsenal, has really benefited the side going into this Christmas period. So, and it's great Big Dunk still involved.
Okay, Manchester City don't have it all their own way against Everton traditionally. Three draws at the Etihad between the two in the last 4 years. And what's going to happen down at St Mary's? Southampton, rejuvenated, take on inconsistent Spurs.
It was in the wake of defeat in this fixture last season, Maurizio Pochettino told me Tottenham needed a radical overhaul. He wasn't wrong. Barring reaching the Champions League final, it was a pretty miserable 2019 for Spurs, who suffered a staggering 22 defeats in the calendar year. Their fans will be hoping 2020 is much more prosperous, and a win at St Mary's to revive their top four aspirations would be the perfect start for Jose Mourinho's team. Southampton have enjoyed a fruitful festive season, taking 7 points from a possible nine, including a surprise win at Chelsea. Their upturn in fortune is reward for the Saints owners for standing by manager Ralf Hasenhüttl, even following their 9-0 drubbing at home by Leicester. Hasenhüttl needs new faces in January, especially at the back, but the home supporters will be feeling much more optimistic than they were a couple of weeks ago. I'll be on commentary duty for TalkSport, and I'm expecting a scintillating encounter.
Watford's revival continued with 3 points against Aston Villa, despite being down to 10 men. Now it's Wolves, and Dream Team's Andrew Butler is here to serve up a New Year's smorgasbord of Dream Team tips. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Sam. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm pleased that you can still talk after what I can imagine is a busy season for a chorister.
There was a lot of singing.
No sore throats or anything like that?
No, there was a lot of singing. And sometimes not in cathedrals, sometimes it was just down the pub, because I'm like that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Did you take anybody home this Christmas?
Bit of a personal question, but no, I actually spent Christmas away with my family.
Oh, that's a shame. You'll do it, I'm sure, in 2020. It's all coming your way.
That's a New Year's resolution.
Talking of good 2020s, Watford, I hope, will be looking forward to the new year. Should we be thinking about getting some Watford players into our dream team? Because Doucouré, in particular, was excellent. Could have scored in the game at the weekend. Deeney and Sarr on the score sheet. Time to pick one of their number and squeeze it into your team?
I think, really, it is the time to get Troy Deeney in your team. I know it sounds kind of obvious, considering he's come back in the team, but he is such a talisman for Watford, and well, the upturn in form for them has really come in hand with the fact that he's back in the team. He scored 17 points this game week. He's only been picked by 0.2% of teams because, you know, he's been injured most of the season. But you just see the way that he's approached the games and come out after the game. I've been watching quite a bit of football, as you can quite imagine, over the Christmas period. He's come out virtually every game and gone, nah, this isn't pressure. I tell you what pressure is. It's my mum working three different jobs. And he says, oh, well, football's just a game, as you were saying after Aston Villa. So he seems like, you know, he carries the team on his shoulders, but he seems kind of not bothered by that responsibility whatsoever. So he's probably a decent pick, because, you know, if Watford play well, then Deeney will probably play well as well.
What about Sarr? Because obviously bought in at huge expense by Javi Gracia in the summer, but there's been two different managers since then. Is finally, are we starting to see the best of him?
I think so. He's been, you know, like you say, his form's been a bit ropey at the start of the season, but scored 7 points this week, 2.5 million in the game. There's probably better options at that sort of a price, but you know, if Watford are to play well, like I said, him Decore, I really like Kapuè. I think he's a really constant source of creativity.
He's not point scorer, though,
but they're not point scorers. Similar to Decore. Decore actually scored his first point since game week 12, so that was about 2.5 months ago in that game last weekend. So it's those sort of players that look good but don't really score too many points on Dream Team.
I saw Sarr against Leicester when Watford played away under Hayden Mullins. I think it was one of his last games before the Palace game, and I thought Sarr was absolutely superb. He was a real handful down that right hand side, so yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he does pick up a few points.
Okay, in that game with Aston Villa, Watford scored 3 goals in a Premier League game for the first time since April. But I've seen Wolves twice in the last week, and I think they are such a well-organised outfit. This could be a cracker, just like the FA Cup semi-final between the two last year, which was a privilege to be at. Who are you looking at in the Wolves rank?
Well, it has to be Adama Traoré.
He's such an exciting
player. I know he's sort of kind of...
You can't say him every week.
No, I know. I know he's sort of flavour of the month, but I just saw this stat from our stats providers who scored, and apparently he's completed more dribbles in December than Bournemouth and Burnley. He's completed 53 dribbles this month. Bournemouth have done 47 and Burnley 32, which, you know, isn't too much of a surprise when it comes to Burnley. But he is just such an exciting player. I genuinely can't believe that he's playing this well, because, you know, I said probably at the start of the season that he is, you know, slightly up and down. His dribbling doesn't always have much of an end product. And he's added that to the game, and you kind of think, blimey, there's a serious player that they've got there.
I must admit, over December, my dribbling has suffered from the end product. Newcastle-Leicester next. Don't put Andy Carroll in because he can't play 2 games in a week. I can't believe you weren't here the week that Miguel Almiron actually scored a goal.
Well, I can't either, but do you know what was really completing the nice narrative arc? My parents were at that game. My mum's a Crystal Palace fan, and they live up that way. So my mum and dad went to that game, and they're avid listeners of the podcast, obviously. So they said over the Christmas table, we were there when Almiron scored, Andrew, and you know, and then you
have they got a t-shirt worst. For that.
And so
I went to Newcastle, and all I got was this lousy Almiron t-shirt. But he did score, so it's okay.
But my dad honestly was he mentioned it 3 or 4 times over the Christmas period. Oh, the
did
atmosphere,
he?
They're absolutely brilliant when he scored. I've never heard cheering like it. It's just, yeah. So I'm glad I missed it, to be honest.
What's Mr. and Mrs. Butler called?
Paul and Rosemary.
Oh, Rosemary.
Paul and Rosemary. Oh, it sounds so lovely, don't they? Are they choristers too?
No, they do spend quite a lot of time in cathedrals, though.
Oh, they sound like a lovely couple. We should get them in the pod.
Feel free. I'll let you know.
Andrew, thank you very much. Dream Team extraordinaire. Back with us in the next couple of days as we look ahead to the FA Cup matches as well. Let's get on to Burnley against Aston Villa.
I was at Vicarage Road to see Villa humiliated by 10-man Watford on game day on Saturday. Manager Dean Smith will be expecting a reaction from his players to their Hornets horror show, but the form book makes grim reading. 5 defeats in 6 matches has left one of the summer's biggest spenders languishing in 18th in the table, with teams above them improving. Form has deserted Smith's men at the worst possible time. Injuries to John McGinn and Tyrone Mings have hit Villa hard, and they need the latter fit as soon as possible. As for Burnley, well, they're one of a number of sides in the lower half of the table who will be looking nervously over their shoulder. The Clarets are only 6 points above the dotted line after back-to-back defeats without scoring a goal. Manager Sean Dyche knows this is a Giltez chance to extend that gap, and midfielder Dwight McNeil says he's relishing the chance to put one over former Clarets goalkeeper Tom Heaton on his return to Turf Moor.
Yes, not enough firepower in that Villa team. Wesley's not scored in his past 12 league matches. That is one of the 10 games of New Year that you can hear live on TalkSport, TalkSport 2 and the TalkSport app. You can get the TalkSport app via your Google Play Store or the iOS Store. Download it. Go to the bottom of the screen after registering. You can look at the live game section, just pick the match you want. And if you happen to be listening to TalkSport on your little app and all of a sudden want to flick over to the cricket or flick over to another game which is simultaneously being broadcast, it's easy as swiping on Tinder across, isn't it, Nicole? Right, let's move on to Brighton versus Chelsea. Frank Lampard got his tactics wrong and then very right at Arsenal. But the inconsistency of this team has been a bit of a problem. Will they enjoy playing against a Brighton side that take risks?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? Frank really turned it round, though, because he bought Jorginho on in, what was it, the 34th minute, 37th minute against Arsenal, something like that, very early on. And it worked wonders, although, you know, I could sit here and argue, should Jorginho have stayed on the pitch to then have scored that first goal against Arsenal? Anyway, he did well. Chelsea started off really poor against Arsenal, but at the end of the day, they did well in the second half and they got that win. And, you know, Brighton obviously beat Bournemouth. They'll be very pleased with that result. But I don't know, I think this is going to be a tough game for Brighton.
I think Sam's right in terms of the inconsistency. If you look back, you know, we've spoken about this so often, you know, balancing Premier League, Champions League, and you think, right, they take one step forward, two steps back. You go back to when they lost against West Ham, who were really struggling for results. And again, it's at the bridge. All the problems seem to be at the bridge. You know, they follow one good result with a really poor one. They beat Lille, then they follow that up and were really desperate against Bournemouth, who had basically nobody available, and they still got a win. And do you know what? Bournemouth probably deserved it. So there's a few little issues that he's got to iron out in terms of their consistency, like against Southampton, who just picked them apart, pressed them, just seemed to press them relentlessly. And I think that'll be a real cause of concern for Frank. But the good thing is, I think he's learning on the job, maybe from the likes of Mourinho, where he's not afraid to make a change early on if it's not working. So that might work in his favour. He's a young coach, he's learning on the job. But so has Graham Potter, and they're in, I think, pretty decent form. You know, two lads who scored their first goals for their club. Yahan backs finally.
He
Aaron
was so
Moy.
Thrilled.
Oh, goodness me. It was incredible, wasn't it?
Oh, Ali Reza. Can we finally give Tammy Abraham the credit he deserves, please? 29 games for club and country this season. 15 goals. Lille, massive goals against them in the Champions League. Wonderful finishes like Southampton away. A hat-trick against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Winner in the 88th minute against Arsenal under pressure. Can we just applaud him? Or is someone going to say, well, he's still not scored against one of the big boys. Arsenal don't count because they're 12th.
Oh, savage. No, we can applaud him. Look, he's doing so well. I think it's, what, 12 league goals now this season?
Yep.
He's brilliant. He's still so young. He's in fine form. I think he's great, and you can't take that away from him by, you know, minor details, really. At the end of the day, he's scoring goals, and he's kind of a massive, massive part of this Chelsea side now.
Well, I mean, look, he's quick, he's strong, he can run in behind, he can show to feet, he can link the play. He's now getting in the end of crosses, which I felt at the start of the season, would he score enough goals from crosses? Mm-hmm. But he's getting across people. You know, he's good in the air. You saw him out muscle against Arsenal. He got a free header quite a few times. And yeah, look, he's absolute top quality, and I think vindicated, you know, Frank's decision. He obviously hasn't played Giroud. He hasn't really had to. He's been able to rely on Tammy, and no doubt that's given him a lot of confidence. And a lot of these forwards we've spoken about thrive on confidence, and certainly Tammy, he knows he's got the backing of the manager. He knows he's going to play basically every game, every minute, and he's rewarded him.
He's got more Premier League goals than Aguero, Sterling, Kane and Mane, but you said he was top quality, absolute top quality. Is he absolute top quality, or is he a player with the potential to have absolute top quality? Because to me, even though he did score that winner against Arsenal, there are a couple of times where I'm thinking, Tammy, make that run. Mm-hmm. When you get that free header, you've got to send it the other side of the goalkeeper. Is he still someone who's learning?
Oh, yeah, he's definitely learning.
Yeah,
he's definitely learning. But the good thing is he's still scoring goals and performing at that level, whether it's Champions League, whether it's Premier League. Now, he will have to refine his game and improve upon them. I mean, we just spoke about Calvert-Lewin and people like that. You know, Jamie Vardy, you know, he's still got to build up that bank of Premier League knowledge, whether that's runs, when to make those runs, getting across, pulling off behind. You know, those little details, bumping centre-halves, you know, the little intricacies that will get him even more goals. But I think he'll certainly do that. I really do.
Okay, Tammy Abraham will be part of the Chelsea team that takes on Brighton this New Year's Day, and you can hear all of the games on TalkSport, TalkSport 2 and the TalkSport app. Okay, it's time for the commentator's curse. Players, we're putting the mockers on this week by giving a statistical reason as to why they will do well in this round of matches. David Connolly, What have you got for me?
Well, I've gone for a player who is an absolute master craftsman. I saw him against Manchester City, who is absolutely brilliant. Against Leicester, fantastic. He's so creative, so brilliant on the ball, and that's Emilio Buendia. Now, he has 6 assists to his name. Yeah, 6 assists for the Canaries, and when he's on form, they do sing. They fly, the Canaries. He's got double the amount of assists as everyone else, thank you. And Norwich have got a must-win game against Crystal Palace.
And Nicole, where are you heading?
Well, so I've gone a bit for a bit of a different one here.
Normally you're Arsenal. Okay.
No, not just Arsenal, but usually I go for maybe a more obvious goal scorer, right?
Okay.
I am going for Sebastien Haller, purely because...
Oh, Haller.
Right. Well, obviously, West Ham have a new manager in. They've got Moyes in. So, you know, there's the whole new manager bounce. Am I right? I mean, look, he needs a goal. He needs a goal. I think he's only scored 1 goal in the past 11 Premier League games. And fans keep calling him a fraud. So I think that, you know, they're playing Bournemouth at home. I think he needs a goal. So I'm backing him to get one for me.
Okay, fair enough. I'm with you. Let's hope that for his sake that is the case. And I like these players that don't score very often, because finally, this week, we saw that he has got the moves like De Jager, Alireza Jahanbakhsh, who in 2017-18 was the top scorer in the Eredivisie. It's easy to score in that league, isn't it, David? Only became the third Iranian to score in the Premier League. But between signing for Brighton for £17 million, £17 million, he just scored his first goal on the 25th of July, 2018, and scoring for the Seagulls, Britain has had 2 prime ministers, 31 different number one records, 26 million days off sick, 957,000 babies have been born in this country, and a goalie from Mexico has scored from his own box. So, what are the chances of him doing the old London bus trick and 2 coming along at once? I think incredibly high. If not, what about David McGoldrick? 17 appearances, no goal in the Premier League for Sheffield United. Maybe it's his turn to break the duck this week. I'm so happy for Alireza Jahanbakhsh. Can you tell? Well done to him. Nicole, thank you very much. I'm pleased we still got a smile on your little face despite what happened at Arsenal at the weekend. David, nice to see you once again. Thank you very much for coming in.
We'll
speak to you soon. All the games on New Year's Day and the subsequent Thursday, Liverpool, Sheffield United, all live on the TalkSport network. You can download our app via the Google Play Store or the iOS Store, and then you can just flick and choose and just decide what you want to listen to. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and you'll get all of the reaction with Game Day, The Verdict and Danny Kelly's record book. We'll see you later in the week for an FA Cup special.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.